Hi guys, I don't normally run ads on this show, but this is the family business, luggagewarehouse.co.za. So if you're looking for luggage, accessories, handbags and fashion stuff, even you can go to luggagewarehouse.co.za. And there are two products that I want to pull out for you here. Number one being Builder Set. You can get great discounts on big collections of big luggage. So if you're thinking of immigrating, it's the perfect way to kind of gear up for that. And the second thing I want to pull out is Luggage Glove, which is a protective sleeve that my dad invented. My brother has kind of perfected over the years. It's a sleeve that pulls over your luggage and then locks closed. It's got a TSA lock. It's got holes for the handles, so it's quite convenient. And it's much more sustainable because you're not just murdering turtles with single-use plastic. That's it for my pitch. Luggagewarehouse.co.za. There's a link in the show notes.
I listened to two of your podcasts on those who moved to Canada. And yeah. I just felt that it seemed a little bit easy for them out of the podcast. Right. I want to bring a bit of reality to it because our experience has been pretty different. Maybe right. It's because of the particular field I'm in, which is agriculture. I can speak for my wife as well. She's in marketing. And I can explain the difficulties regarding work, finding work.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to South African Expats. I'm Jonathan Varnke, your host. This is the podcast for immigration-curious South Africans, and I don't think that curiosity has diminished in recent days in terms of stage 4 to 6 load shedding in South Africa and all the usual shenanigans. And right now I'm hearing and reading still the continuous news stories of people are going to New Zealand, people are trying to go to Canada and all that kind of thing. And I thought that a little bit more depth in terms of Canada would be very useful because I think it's a very desirable destination. And today we're talking to Grant Norman, who is a South African living in British Columbia in a city, I assume, called South Surrey. Or is it a, Grant, would you call it a city, a suburb, a town?
Suburb.
Suburb, 40 kilometers out of Vancouver. And Grant is in agriculture. His wife is in marketing. And they've got an interesting story to tell in terms of their journey to Canada. First of all, Grant, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you very much for having me.
Especially with this massive time lag between Vancouver and British Columbia and South Africa, it's a bit challenging to make meetings happen. So first of all, let's start with how your story started. Tell me a little bit about your life in South Africa before you decided to move.
I had a very good life in South Africa. We had a very great upbringing. My mom, my dad, a wonderful, sizable family business, well looked after. And I really enjoyed growing up there. And there was absolutely no reason to want to leave such a beautiful country. And to this day, for me, it's just a brilliant country with so much potential if we could just be harnessed the correct way. I was definitely not pushed out of South Africa. I was more pulled out of South Africa in the sense of in 1995, I was privileged enough to represent my country in sport karate. And we traveled to Montreal, Canada, and then also to New York. And I told my dad then and there, I absolutely love it. And that itch was there. It already started.
Right.
And I really wanted to travel and experience the world. Yes.
What style of karate? Shotokan or?
Sport karate being kickboxing.
Oh, okay. Hectic. That's rough and tough.
I got my ass handed to me. That's all good.
So you told your dad, I really love that. And was his response quite supportive?
No. Yeah, my dad was one of those gentlemen, used to be the chicken, right? So if the flap goes up and you leave the nest, the flap comes down, you're not allowed back in. So I was very loyal. I decided to stay with him. And we got involved in the family business and it was a lot of fun, great team there, successful. And there was no reason to leave. In 2009, geez, my world just went from underneath me. There was an attempt at hijacking on my mom. And then a couple of months later, we had three armed men walk into our home and they decided to want to rob us, whatever they wanted to do. My dad and I were busy. So as you walk into the front door, our couches were literally walking on us. And I had my back turned to the guys, and my dad saw them, and he just saw white. So he just wanted to defend as best he could. I just noticed it, and I was just trying to negotiate or just try and keep everyone calm because it's happening so quickly, so fast. Our dogs had seen the assailants, and they attacked, and my dad attacked. and all of a sudden was just bullets flying. And in the end, there was about 8 shots that were fired. 2 hit my dad, yes. 1 in the stomach, 1 in the leg. And then they say one should have hit me, but it didn't. And then hit the panic alarm. So much happening, chaos, and they left. And obviously, we're just completely worried about my dad. That whole experience was like it was pushed me to want to take this a bit more seriously. I wanted to say, prior to this, in 2008, I had a lecturer at the time, Professor Sean. He headed up the Ivy League school here in Canada. And his global business strategy course, I topped his class. And he tapped me on the shoulder and he said to me, "You do well in Canada." I didn't think much of it at the time, but this incident of the shooting was, that kind of hit home for me to take this process a little bit more seriously. But at
Did
the time,
you recover all right?
They saved his life and he was alive for another 6 years after that. My mom, I don't want to get too much in the detail here, but my mom, my sister, my brother, and my family endured a hell of a lot in terms of emotional trauma. Very difficult. And we survived as a unit and we did what we had to do to look after my father. He passed away peacefully in 2015. It was that particular day, July 26, where I had made my decision. Okay, this is happening. I'm going for it. But at the time, I was still, and I still am, extremely hopeful that South Africa can do well, because I was president of an industry organization at the time as well. And we were working with the fresh produce markets. And I dealt with some of the most talented, amazing government officials at the time. And I felt a lot of positivity. So on the one hand, definitely a pull factor. And I think irrespective of the shooting or not, I still would have wanted to come to Canada and experience the love of traveling, something new, completely different. So yeah, that's pretty much that, yeah.
And what was it about Canada at the time that drew you? Because obviously over the last couple of decades, our perception of different countries has changed and all that. But my perception of Canada was always, it's like America, but not insane. So it's advanced, it's first world, everyone's polite, it's safe, obviously, and the natural beauty is insane. That's my perspective of it. What was it about Canada that pulled you towards it?
I hadn't seen British Columbia. I'd only seen Montreal, and I loved it. I was willing to settle anywhere in Canada. It wasn't just about British Columbia. We came to British Columbia by chance, which we can get into a little bit later. Mm. But I would have settled anywhere in Canada.
And it was
even Winnipeg.
Okay. Well, you must have a very high tolerance for cold.
I do.
Your lecturer obviously said you'd do well in Canada and you were looking to kind of spread your wings, but why not Australia? And I say Australia just out of a hat, but were there any other contenders?
No, I had my heart set on Canada. You start researching about places in Canada and you start seeing the mountains in British Columbia. You start seeing this wonderful world called Toronto, which is a mini New York. And it's different. I don't know if you can remember also that Royal Canadian Mounted Police series that used to play back home. Those type of things also push you in a weird way.
So that was around 2015. And then what was between 2015 and now? You said it was interesting how you ended up in British Columbia. How did that happen?
Sure. So 2015 happened. I took 6 months just to research everything. There's a lot of scams out there. So you want to... And I'd nearly fallen to a few of them. So I managed to reach out to a lady by the name of Deanne Akers. I emailed her details to you. She was fantastic. So smooth, so helpful. And
it
was an initial...
I'll put those details in the show notes for everyone listening. Sorry to interrupt you, mate.
No problem. We had an initial discussion. At the time, she was based in Joburg. We had initial discussion, which I know you were asked about some costs. At the time, I think it was about 2,000 Rand to do the first discussion with her. Mm-hmm. And that lasted about an hour. And then I'd been satisfied with that she'll be the person to help me. And then I needed to convince my wife that this is what I want to do. So then I arranged a meet with my wife at Premier Piatti in Camps Bay. And I said to her, "Listen, this is what I want to do and I would like to do it with you. Should we do it?" And she said, yes, she's in. And at the time, my son, we started to talk about having kids as well. that type of thing. And I think she was pregnant at the time.
Oh, hectic.
Yeah, then we started the whole process. I introduced her to Deanne. She was feeling comfortable. She had a lot of questions to ask, and Deanne was very helpful. And she was also based in South Africa, which was also made me feel a bit better. She currently is based in Ottawa now, but she has an office in Joburg. And I'm pretty sure their standard of operations is still at a high level. Then we did the whole express entry, and we had achieved our points. And then now it was just a waiting game, and I needed to wait for the points to come down. But at the time, you are trying to remain as flexible as possible. You want to stay as liquid as possible. You don't want to incur debts, things that you have to pay off, because you're going to need a lot of money to come here.
Sure.
And so you lose out on investment opportunities. You're just trying to keep everything, trying to keep your nest as liquid as possible. And then there were times, you know, it was such a long wait as well. There were times where I just said to myself, this is such a waste of money and time. There's no ways the points are going to come down. And it's not just our country that's applying. There's a lot of countries, a lot of people from across the world that apply, and also of a high skill. I'll never forget 4 a.m. one morning, I woke up and I checked the emails, and the points had come down just enough for us, and we got accepted in. So that was a lot of jumping for joy, a lot of happiness. But then you got a long, enduring fight ahead of you, and we'll get to that now.
Okay.
So we're all excited, and now we need to know, okay, well, where are we going to live? Where do we want to go? So I said to Carla, let's take a holiday there, and let's go and see British Columbia, Vancouver. Let's go see Toronto, Ottawa. I had family. That'd be very helpful. And then we actually didn't go to Nova Scotia, although I must admit, to this day, I still want to go see it. It must be quite amazing. And then we flew back home, and Carla had a heart set on British Columbia. Once that happened, we needed to start, because we had now followed the process and we had now permanent residency and all those type of things in place, we were allowed to apply for work from Canada. Sorry, apologies, from South Africa. And I managed to apply to a lot of people. The audience must understand is that, yes, you can apply to jobs from South Africa, but preferably they would like you here to meet them. They would like you in Canada to meet them. And that's what we did. I was invited to an interview. They asked if I was prepared to come. And I said, yes, I'm prepared to fly up and come and meet you. I met them. I'll give you a quick story on that one. I arrived at the airport in Vancouver with very limited driving on the other side of the road. And they arranged me a rental at the airport.
Oh, right.
And the drive, it was nighttime, raining, as what Vancouver is. And it was so scary. I didn't know, you can, at a red light, you are allowed to turn if everything's clear with oncoming traffic. So I'm standing at the robots with it parked, waiting for the green light. And I've got cars behind me hooting,
freaking
saying, dude,
out.
You can go, man. I'm like, why are you hooting at me? What's going on?
Yeah.
And yeah, so those type of things you learn very quickly. I managed to find my hotel and had the interview, successful interview, and then flew back. Mm-hmm. I remember phoning my wife on the way back and saying, you're going to love it here. This looks good. So then, flew back, and 6 months later, it was the 31st of December, 2018. We said our goodbyes and we flew, and we landed 1st of January, 2019, and absolutely exhausted. My son was young. Sorry, our son was young and didn't travel well, didn't want daddy, only wanted mommy. Oh, my word. At the time, I think he was about a year. And the plane knew it. The people on the plane knew who he was. So, shame. And I still to this day say the greatest hero is my wife. She endured a hell of a lot to get us here. We landed. What I highly recommend to your audience, if they go through with it, try to put a little bit of money aside to book yourself into a hotel there at the airport before you start traveling to your destination. The reason why is you want to have fresh eyes. You're so excited, mixed emotions. And we were still very sad, as well as very excited. And so I booked us into the Fairmont just for 2 nights, just to be fresh. We took a drive in. And at the time, we get to see that place. Vancouver is so beautiful. The SkyTrain, the infrastructure is just incredible. So it was good for us. And then what we did was we had we checked out, and then we took a taxi, which was so expensive, from Vancouver International through to our Airbnb place in Abbotsford. It allowed us to be flexible, not tied into any rental agreements yet. We want to be sure where we want to stay. So that might be a good takeout for your audience, is maybe just to Airbnb it when you initially get here. So while I'm working and trying to find my feet, my wife is now looking around and wanting to see where does she want to put the nest, if you want to call it that. And she found this wonderful place called South Surrey, which is, it's a lovely place, very expensive as well, like everything here in Canada. And we managed to find a place here, and we started renting. And this is now the second rental. We stayed at the one place for 3 years, and this is now the second place.
Okay, so you've been there for a few years now. I imagine property is incredibly expensive, so rental is probably the way to go for most people.
Look, my mom's hopeful that we will. I'm more on the ground here. The housing prices are crazy. So I think I saw a one-bedroom apartment now for standard $640,000. This is the one-bedroom unit.
It's 9 million rand or something, or 10 million rand.
About 8.5 million rand.
Yeah.
You didn't ship anything. You didn't take anything with you. Just pack up your life in some bags.
We only had our bags and Geordie and arrived. And then we had some money in the bank, so we were able to get furniture, get all that type of stuff set up instead of hauling it over from South Africa.
So when you first arrived in British Columbia, what were your and you had visited before, but what are the first impressions you have when you arrive in British Columbia as a tourist, as a person who, and then I guess as a tourist first, and then as you live there, what unfolds that you go like, wow, so this is what life is like here?
The beauty that is incredibly beautiful here. And the friendliness of the people are really friendly here. In some ways, maybe similar to South Africa from where I was living. But the friendliness, the diversity, if you're someone who enjoys diversity like I do, you get to speak to Vietnamese, you get to speak to people who are Punjabi, and you hear their stories. There's also a South African community here. No, it's just wonderful, friendly people.
So with Vancouver,
as well as the scenery here.
Right. Is Vancouver up against the mountains and the forests and all that?
You can see the mountains in the background. Vancouver's against the ocean, right against the ocean. And if you look inland, you can see those beautiful white cap peaks right there.
Are you into skiing?
Hiking, mountains. I think if I had to ski, I'd make a complete embarrassment of myself. I've never tried it. Maybe one day. But I think if I fall, the medical costs might be a bit, it's quite expensive. Yeah.
I just recently came back from, I was very shortly in London. And one of the things that struck me about it is that it's just, there are very few British Londoners in London. It's a cosmopolitan city with people all from all over the world. Is Vancouver kind of that, or is it more predominantly native Vancouverians or Vancouverites or whatever you want to call it? And then
it's very cosmopolitan, very diverse, from Japanese to lots of Asians, Vietnamese, Indians, Punjab, and then there's also us, very diverse people from China.
Is there a bit of a South African, is there a community, is there like an expat clique for South Africans, or is it?
There's a Facebook group. I must actually ask my wife to give me the details. I'll send it through to you. But there's a Facebook group that is a community of South Africans living over here. There's also the South African shop here as well, which is quite interesting. Yeah.
Do they, because in my experience, I'm a member of a few of those groups now, mostly in Australia.
Yeah.
And about half of the posts are people selling biltong makers. Is that, kind of
jerky's not true? Yeah, I'm probably going to anger a few people here locally. Jerky's not built on. Yeah.
No,
it's who they're trying to kid. Come on, man.
Yeah. Okay. So you've been there for 3 years now, and you said you had a couple of stories to tell about the hard scrabbleness of making life work there. And tell me about some of the challenges of living in Canada.
I had a job lined up, so I was getting ready to do what I need to do. And my start to my job was fantastic. It was good for the first 3 months. And then you realize, okay, people are wonderful. They're friendly out here. They're wonderful people. The work culture is tough. And it took a while for us to adjust to it. I've got a few sayings here. Leave your ego at the door and prepare to hustle. You've got to go through military training. When I say military, I mean that like this. You've got to earn a bit of equity.
Doing air quotes, everyone.
You've got to earn a bit of sweat equity. You've got to show that knowledge is power here. So you've got to add a really good job at the time, and you need to learn quickly. The other big thing here is labor shortage is a big thing. The one story I got from my previous job, it was a hot sunny day and we needed to discard some product. It was about 4 skids. So a skid to your listeners is a pallet. So it's 4 pallets of product that I need to take to the dump and discard. So I arranged the truck driver and I asked if anyone wanted to come and help me, and everyone's saying, no, sunstroke, it's too hot. I said, okay, no problem. So I was hoping at the time that there would be people at the dump that could possibly just help me. And we managed to get there, which was just down the road. And I was plant manager at the time in my first occupation, and wearing a shirt, the typical smart way you dress for work. And I was standing there looking, and I was wondering who's going to help me or if anyone's going to discard the product. And I just had people looking at me. I'm like, I'm looking at you. You're looking at me. Who's going to do this?
Yeah, they're all like, that's a very nice shirt for someone who's about to order like, exactly. stuff.
And I was stunned. No one was helping me. And I eventually said, okay, fine. I'll take my shirt off. I was luckily wearing a vest underneath and hang the shirt up. And in the soaring heat, I threw them away myself. And it's not like in South Africa where you throw the carton and the product into the dump. It's you got to separate it. So you got to first empty the corrugate and then place the box on a skid that probably gets recycled in some way.
Sure.
And it just stunned me that you're the senior manager here and you also doing the hard yards, the labor. And that's one of the stories of many. People are always shopping around you for the best wage. So the people who you hire for labor to do the labor work, they might get offered something down the road and not come to work. And you've scheduled them to come to work on that particular day. So that's one headcount that's out of your facility. And all of a sudden, there could be more of them, which in many cases there were. And you end up doing the work yourself. So there were a lot of days like that. It almost felt like everyone wanted to be the boss. And that's what I learned very quickly in my first job. The positive side of that is made me a lot stronger. And I started realizing just like what I was capable of if I needed to push myself. And it got the eyes of some people and it landed me in my next role, which I'm forever grateful for.
Right.
So yeah, burnout is a real thing. I got shingles, just working so much. It's those type of things that I don't think people realize is really tough here. And maybe it's just in particular my field, but I'm not so sure because Carla went through a very tough time as well. She landed an amazing job, an amazing corporate, and she was in cloud 9. But we didn't have support at the time. So we didn't have my mom-in-law, who's now living with us. We didn't have her yet to look after Jordy. And once again, Jordy doesn't want me and I'm busy. He's only just attached to his mom. And my wife was switched on nonstop 7 days a week. And people will email you at night looking for answers. And so it's just always switched on.
Okay.
And eventually we both, and it was difficult for me as well, because I was also going through my difficult adjustment. And it was difficult for me to be there as a supportive husband because I'm just trying to keep my head above water and trying to adjust to life here. And Carla was also trying to do the same her side. And you really got to have a strong marriage to endure these type of difficulties. And she was in marketing. There's a lot of marketers here. You're right. So they're not looking for marketers. So when Carla eventually made the decision, look, she's going to part ways with this corporate to be more of a try find something more suitable for her. The applications went out and nothing came back. And you're on a single income now. You've got some support coming from government, the unemployment, the URF type of our version of it. And money starts bleeding very fast. Once again, it's expensive, yeah. So I'll never forget the day I was at my new job and Carla, we can laugh about it now. Carla phones me and she says, are you sitting down? I was like, no, I'm standing. And she says, I've just lost my job. And I was like, you're kidding. Because we had just now gone through this whole corporate episode and she just landed a new job, and they're just weird. It's almost like they could hire and fire as they please.
Yeah.
And you have to adjust very fast. And I do feel there might have been a bit of abuse from the employer side. Carla's a girl of good integrity, so I don't think it was, I don't believe for a fact anything she had done. But anyway, be that as it may, with those doors that closed, we endured, and she landed a lovely role now with a company called White Spot and Triple O's, which is a restaurant chain here, as old as Vancouver is. It's almost like it's an institution here, and
like the Wimpy are of
pretty much
Vancouver. Yeah, okay.
Just a better burger than Wimpy.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
I've got to be careful, like as I say. It all goes down back to leadership. Leadership is crucial, and she found good leadership there. I have found great leadership where I am. And when you arrive, it's going to be hard. The adjustment's hard. There's going to be doors that close. There's going to be politics. There's going to be everything thrown at you. And you got to learn to just endure and just remember the why, enjoy the why, or keep that purpose just front and center. And for me, it was, I'm traveling. I'm doing something that I wanted to do. I'm able to build some wealth over time here. But yeah, it's tough. But also, I had a few. One of the things that after listening to some of your podcasts, I was wondering, like, what's the best way to describe it for you? And I call it single mom vigilance, right? So you're a single mom. You got a kid that you got to look after. You cannot make a mistake. You're probably working two jobs, which they do. Yeah, there are people that work two jobs. Yeah,
yeah,
and it's really tough.
You've described yourself to me in a previous conversation as someone who gets up at 3 a.m. in the morning. What's all that about?
I was going through a very tough time, questioning the move, and I've been doing this now for probably about over a year now. I created my own BS to learn to endure. And whatever else comes after that, you tend to enjoy it. Another thing you don't know is that I love my cold water swimming. So I like to...
You're a total masochist. I get it.
I enjoy... There's a thing about enduring, getting up at 3 a.m. because it's so difficult. It's a mindset switch that helps me deal with what I'm dealing with. And it helps improve who I am as a person, makes me tough. You've got to be tough. I remember during COVID, the government in Canada helped a lot of the people with a thing called the CERB, right? Because people were losing jobs. It was just a disaster. Kudos to Canada. They were helping in a nice way. But there's also room for abuse. And what happens is people don't come to work, and you've got to... We are a very busy business. You and your team have got to, what the limited team that you have there, you've got to rise up and get it done, because there isn't much tolerance for failure. There isn't much tolerance for, and that's just not our particular work. It's the work culture. You don't want to make a mistake. And what I do, getting up at 3 a.m., cold water swims, might look crazy to people, but for some other reason, it helps me endure and appreciate what I'm going through here.
Sure. I experienced it in America and in Spain as well, where there are far fewer protections for employees than there are in South Africa. There's far less of a process. It just seems to be a case of, I don't like your face today, you can go, you're fired. Whereas 100%. That would set off a string of events in South Africa, like
Absolutely.
Tribunal hearings, and you need three warnings and all that kind of thing.
Correct.
So it must feel like being on a tightrope, especially when you're trying to like make ends meet and all that. Must be a lot of anxiety based on that.
Yeah, and it's so different. Africa, there's a lot of labor, so you can enforce policies. Over here, there's a labor shortage. Sometimes it's an employee's market, and you've got to be able to navigate the ship with employees taking chances. And that can be very difficult.
How old is Geordie now?
5.
And how has he dealt with, if he moved when he was 1, obviously he just sees himself as Canadian, but is North British Columbia like very family friendly, and there's a lot of support?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's so much to do. The parks are well kept. There's wonderful hiking trails, wonderful camps, camping grounds. The only thing we miss on this side is white sand and blue sea, because it's not the case here. And he absolutely loves it. I must admit, the daycare where he's at, just by the way, daycare is not $300. On your one guy mentioned on the podcast that it's daycare was $300. Man, I'm paying $1,000 for Joy's daycare. Yeah, it's expensive.
Per what? Week?
$1,000 per month.
Per month. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Thank goodness. But that's still a lot. That's
an incredible amount. It's a lot. Yeah. But they prepare the kids really well. I'm really impressed with what they've done. And yes, we had to endure with that payment, but the value add has been incredible. So Geordie's development has been fantastic. And he's now ready for kindergarten. And the lovely part about kindergarten now is that you don't pay for schooling anymore. So that's Carl and I looked at each other and we were like, yeah.
Completely.
It couldn't come fast enough.
We're going to use all that money.
Yeah. Oh, man, just thinking about it now. Yeah. But we're very happy with what's happening to Geordie.
Cool. For comparison's sake, because my son is about to go into a creche, a play school, let's call it that. He's two. And that is going to run at, the place we're looking at is 2,640 Rand a month. So, less than a third of what Canada's looking for. Yeah. So that's quite hectic. Yeah. Before we get onto some of the specifics of the different aspects of life over there, which we'll touch on quickly, when do you miss home? Or what do you miss about South Africa?
I miss home a lot. I miss my mom, my brother, my sister. I speak to my mom every day. And since when I make that phone call every day that you miss seeing them, miss the bras. So my mom would say to me, I'm visiting Ryan, who's my younger brother, and he's cooking, he's doing a bra for us. I'm like, oh, man. I was like, it's just, and he makes good food. So it's those type of things.
Do you feel like over time, at least, that you will be in a position where you feel relatively financially secure? Do you feel like your buying power has increased since you've moved to Canada?
It's getting better now. It was quite a slog for the first 2 years, but I'm definitely feeling a lot more comfortable now going forward. And they say it takes a good 5 years to settle down. And it's true. We're now in our fourth year and I'm starting to feel a lot more comfortable with what's happening.
I send money home.
I've got a policy for Geordie and my wife if something happens to me. And when the rand struggles and we're at 12.2, which we were yesterday, and then it's nice to send money back home. So you do feel some good benefits.
Totally. I guess the truth for anyone moving to a first world country, UK, whatever it might be, is that the 3-bedroom house, for example, that we live here in here in Cape Town, you're trading that up for an apartment if you're near a city in a first world country.
100%.
Its costs are a whole different world. So your lifestyle immediately takes a very big step. It's not backwards necessarily, but sideways, or to a point where if you've got a kid or two and then you're suddenly living in an apartment, that's quite an adjustment when you're used to living in like a house, for example. Yeah, I imagine that's quite weird. So I just want to be respectful of your time here. So let's pop onto these quality of life categories here. We've got a few kind of like quick fire vibes. And it's interesting, every time I ask about healthcare, there's different responses. I guess everyone has a different experience, especially if you're talking about the NHS. What's your experience of the Canadian healthcare system?
Very good. Very happy.
Have you had any kind of accidents or major issues that they've had to deal with?
No, nothing, touch wood. The system works well. People are well looked after. I've heard no negative issues about the healthcare system this side. And you remember, you pay a significant amount of tax and the service deliveries are good.
Great. And then in terms of education, obviously, as you said, once you get to kindergarten, it becomes free, which is great. Is the level of, I guess, curriculum and education has impressed you?
Yes, I'm happy. If I look at what they've done with Geordie and his development, it's at a really strong level in my opinion. But then again, I speak to my young nephew back in South Africa, and he's incredible as well. I think the schooling systems are good both sides from what I've seen.
Arts and culture, obviously you're quite close to Vancouver itself. You're getting opportunity to see bands and see movies and that kind of stuff. Obviously post-pandemic, I'm talking now.
There are lots of things going on. It really is fantastic. It's also a film capital. A lot of things get filmed here. So you got all that arts and crafts, etc. going on. So there's always something happening here, yeah.
How do you feel about the restaurants and the food?
It's expensive, but it tastes good. It's worth it. It's a very good food. I'm a burger fanatic. So having White Spots and Triple O's, that's always a win.
Do you guys get like a discount card?
Every now and then we get despoiled a bit, so that's quite nice. But fine dining, we haven't had much opportunity, but there's some wonderful places in Vancouver that are just absolutely stunning.
And then when it comes to opportunity to travel, obviously that's been severely curtailed for 2 years now.
Absolutely.
But your position in British Columbia gives you access primarily, obviously, to America, but then also to East Asia quite easily. Like, yes. Where are the places that are easiest or the best to travel from where you are?
For leisure and vacation time, Mexico is very popular.
Okay.
We also have Hawaii on our doorstep, which is a good, I think, about 6-hour flight away. Also very popular. Very expensive, but very popular. A lot of people travel back to Europe. It's not that far. There's also the Caribbean's not far away either. So there's lots. Plus, and then there's the US, the United States, right on our doorstep. Lots to see there. And then there's also our own place here. Alberta's not far away. 9 hours drive. Stunning mountains, lakes.
You say 9 hours drive?
Yeah, Alberta, yeah.
And then you also described it as pretty close.
Oh, well, second biggest country, so in terms of land, things are pretty far.
Yeah, that's hectic. Yeah, look, obviously within Canada itself, there's billions of trees to see and lots of mountains. But like those acid lakes, I would love to see those ice blue lakes and all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. That's Banff in Alberta. Fantastic. Calgary.
Okay. So how easy or difficult has it been for you to integrate into the culture of Canada? Do you feel like you were easily welcomed into it, or was it a struggle?
No, very welcoming people, lovely people. A lot of the people here are either first generation, second generation, third generation immigrants. They've all struggled. They've all felt it. And there's a respect to any immigrant coming in. Right. So in terms of that, people are very wonderful. I struggled with the work culture. That's where I struggled. Back in South Africa, you can delegate someone to go do that. Over here, it wasn't always as easy. Some cases, resistance. And I'm not talking now about my current work. My current job is fantastic. Previously, it was tough, very tough.
And then lastly, what advice would you give people considering moving to British Columbia, Vancouver, and the area? And I'll add one specific question on there. Move to Vancouver or move to a suburb around the area, like outside of the city itself?
Okay. It's not that far from everything. So you can move Vancouver, Greater Vancouver area. I think the furthest point where I would start worrying a bit is Chilliwack. That's quite far. But all depends on where your work is based, where you're able to find work. But the surrounding areas of Vancouver are really good. Things to remember when you come here, I would highly recommend save enough money. We came over with the bare minimum needed, and we're making it work. A lot of our resources are still based in South Africa. Try, make sure you can find yourself a good company. Companies like Southmill Champs, where I'm based, companies like White Spot Triple O's, where my wife is based, that is incredible leadership. And Carla always talks about a lot of the restaurants at White Spot restaurants are always looking for staff. Reach out, that type of thing. Do your homework. I highly recommend using someone to come over here. Do not do it on your own. If a mistake happens, you got to redo it all. And those mistakes are costly. A lot of scam artists out there. So I highly recommend Deanne. She was absolutely fantastic. And I've had a lot of people reach out to me, and I've advised them to go to Deanne. I've never heard of how the experience was, but my experience was brilliant.
Sure. Okay, great.
In preparation for this, I was talking to my wife, asking what's the one thing if you had to describe the difference. And in South Africa, you'd write an email and say, "Dear so-and-so, hope and trust your weekend was well. This is what I need from you." And you can almost sense the positive tone coming through the email. Oh, yeah, there's no name. There's no, what are you doing? There's just instructions, and you got to execute. When I received that email, I was like, oh, God, what did I do to piss you off? And it bothers you the whole day, but you get so used to it now.
That's hectic. That I think that is a very different thing, because when I send emails, when I receive them, it's always, as you say, there's a lot of adding positivity to the tone of it. So if I just got, don't like this, change this, fix that, rewrite, this is bad, I'd have a whole identity crisis. So good to remember if you ever end up in that situation, that's just the way they are.
Yeah.
I had a friend who moved to China, and said, people will just push you into the road to get past you. They don't care. But the implicit thing is that you push back. It's just everyone accepts that. And if you elbow someone out of the way, they won't even take offense. They're just like, that's life here.
I don't want to sugarcoat anything. Sure. It is tough, but the rewards are good. I have the privilege of working with an incredible team. And my team is pretty diverse. I've got British, I've got Vietnamese, Punjabi, Jamaica, and the diversity is fantastic. Just you're fresh thinking, even though they are maybe employed to do unloading for us, they come with good ideas. And if you are one of those people that embrace that and you bring it all in, wow, like you can really do some good magic, and it's working so far.
Sure. And if you had to boil down the benefits of living in Canada, like, is it what, safe political stability, safety? Like, what are the kind of 3 to 5 things that you would say, these are the things that make me feel good about Canada?
What I would firstly say is that, yes, there's challenges back home in South Africa, but there's challenges here too. So don't think that this place is absolutely perfect. Right. There are challenges. I think the difference might just be the scale. But in terms of benefits of Canada, for me, off the bat, I love my mountains. I love my hiking. I love my lakes. And I love the cold. That, for me, is what I love about this place. Funny enough, you talk about snow. I was just thinking now, I was stuck in the snow with my car beginning of the year. And that was a terrible experience. To be stuck in the snow, late for work, unable to go, and your tires are just turning, but you're not moving. Oh, it's also an adventure. Can be a lot of fun if you've got the right mindset. Healthcare is good. Schooling is good. Things are clean and neat. You don't see a lot of pollution. There's a high emphasis on keeping it clean, this side. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool, Grant. Thank you so much for your time, mate. I really appreciate it.
Great. No problem. My pleasure. Take it easy.
South African Expats is produced by Jonathan Vanka and brought to you by Ping Productions.